going beyond the headlines to the deeper issues. 96.3 WHUR and HUR Voices, Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment, where your questions and comments matter at 202-319-7810. Join the conversation.
Welcome back to the Daily Drum on WHUR and Sirius XM Channel 141. This is the Inside Segment. I'm Harold Fisher. If you know what's good for your Thanksgiving feast, you're already in the kitchen and getting some things ready for Thursday. We have a lot of experienced family cooks with tried and true recipes. Then there are those who may not have everything together. Well, tonight, we have help for everyone who will spend time in the kitchen for the Thanksgiving feast. My guests tonight are Angela Chester Johnson. She is a master chef, and she has some thoughts about, among all other things, cranberry sauce. And Reginald Mack, also known as Chef Rom, he has tips on how to take your dishes to the very next level. If you have questions, don't be afraid. You can change your name to protect the innocent if you must. But give us a call at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We're going to talk about everything from giblets to gobblers. Happy Thanksgiving, everybody. How you doing?
Doing great. Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving, everybody.
Thank you so much. So you've already brought some goodies in here for me to taste. And I'm going to get to those in just a bit. But the first thing, we really need to make sure that people have an idea of what to do and what not to do. Today is Tuesday. You have 2 days. I'm going to start with you, Angela. What should you be doing right now in preparation? Let's assume that you have everything that you need from the grocery store. What should you be doing right now?
Right now, if you're hosting Thanksgiving, mm-hmm. or even if you're a person like me that has to have the smell of turkey in the house, whether you go out as a guest or not, you should be prepping. And you should be prepping so that you can enjoy the meal yourself. The difficulty and the challenge and the time for Thanksgiving dinners is prepping. It's cleaning the greens. It's cutting the greens. It's cutting the onions and celery and carrots and those types of things. Starting tomorrow, which is
Wednesday.
Tomorrow Wednesday?
Yeah,
absolutely.
Tomorrow's Wednesday. Yeah.
I say time to throw that turkey in a brine.
Okay.
I'm big on brining because one thing you don't want to do on Thanksgiving is serve a dry turkey.
Yeah. Nobody wants a dry turkey. And it's easier said than done, isn't it?
Definitely.
It is easier said than done. There are techniques, though. There are techniques mm-hmm. to help you with that turkey. There are roasting bags. Yes, roasting bags hold in the moisture. And then towards the end, maybe 15 minutes before you mm-hmm. serve that turkey, you open it up. You can glaze it with a honey and orange sauce or chili and lime sauce. Or you can just open it up and baste it with some butter and some of the juice and let it brown. So mm-hmm. it's that golden, gorgeous turkey. But the bag is one thing, but I swear by brining, which brine is salt.
Okay.
Salt water, okay? And if you soak that turkey in salt water, and of course, being the exploratory person that I am in the kitchen, you want to throw some herbs in that salt water.
What kind of herbs are we talking about?
Well, we have traditional herbs for turkey, which are rosemary, sage, thyme. Those are the traditional herbs. So it's almost in everything. But now, I mean, we do things up. You can do Cajun. You can do injections of Cajun sauce. You can throw in chili. You can throw in citrus. I'm a big citrus lover when it comes to fowl, to poultry.
Mm-hmm.
What about you, Chef Ron?
Yeah, I was about to say, you know, what does, and I want to start at the beginning, what does the brining do? What does that salt do? Because, you know, we are talking about black folks a lot of times, and those who may not be familiar with brining, the first thing they think is, you know, diabetes, hypertension, high blood pressure. I don't want added salt. Would that brine be an issue for folks like that?
Well, not really, because what's going to happen is after you brine it, you're going to rinse off that salt. So it's basically just softening that turkey up and helping the cooking process go along. Me, myself, I like a nice jerk turkey. I don't know if you guys like spices. Nice Caribbean jerk turkey. Season that bad boy up overnight, marinate it, and then you would cook it the same way. Maybe, like you say, in the roasting bag. You could smoke it. A lot of people are smoking the turkeys these days.
Mm-hmm. So, absolutely. Yeah.
So when you brine a turkey, you know, these are big birds. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about a 15 to a 20-pound bird, what do you put it in? Kind of run that down for me.
Well, that's a very good question. Personally, I use a big old gumbo pot. If you have a stock pot, you know, you can soak it in there. Also, I don't know how many people remember the old school blue and white speckled turkey pans that your grandma used to use. You can soak it, but then you have to turn it because it's not deep enough for the whole turkey. But that's where you would brine it. I use a stock pot, and you want to just cover it.
Okay. Are we talking about warm brine, cold brine? Does it matter?
I don't think it really matters. I use room temperature water. Room temperature water, yeah.
And how do you know how much is too much salt?
Well, you can always add, but you can never take away.
That's right.
So you don't want to start off with too much salt.
You're talking for a 15 or 20 pound turkey, you're talking half a cup of salt, cup of salt, cup and a quarter.
I'll say a cup of salt should do it.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And then when you rinse it, do you just put it in the sink and just spray it off or what?
You do. You just spray it off. You put it in the sink and either run the faucet over it, or if you have a sprayer, you just spray it off. And then you add other seasonings. You don't need to re-salt, but you want to do other seasonings with your turkey.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We are talking about your Thanksgiving Day feast. How not to mess it up. Let's just keep it real. If you are a sage, pun intended, in the kitchen, or even if this is your first Thanksgiving where you're going to do the turkey yourself, give us a call if you have any questions or comments. Again, at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Okay, so once you brined it, and I'm assuming, do you inject it if you have something there, or can you brine and inject, or what?
You definitely can.
Okay.
I mean, you don't have to, because like I say, that brine has already injected that flavor into that turkey.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, if you want double impact, go ahead and throw some of that injector in there, Cajun butter.
Okay. So, now what about the cooking process? Let's say we have a 15-pound turkey. It has been brined and now seasoned with whatever it is that you plan on seasoning it with. What kind of temperature and what are the foundational rules for cooking that turkey in the oven?
Well, you don't want to put the oven too high. I would say a safe temperature is between 350 and 375.
Mm-hmm.
Some people like to cook low and slow. But what we know now is that for safety's sake, you want to keep that poultry at a certain degree. So I would never go below 325, would you say, Chef?
No.
I really would do mine at 350 or above.
For how long?
Well, it's per pound.
It is per pound. What'd you say about 15-pound turkey?
15-pound turkey.
You're looking at about 2 hours to cook that whole turkey.
To 15, 2 hours to cook a whole turkey, or is it 2 hours per pound?
Well, per pound, it's 12 minutes per pound, right?
That's about 20.
Okay, 20 minutes per pound. Okay, I'm not going to your house. No, I'm kidding. No. You get turkey out gobbling.
I will jump in to say that when you brine your turkey, it cooks faster.
Why is that?
I'm not a chemist, but I do know
that you already started the cooking.
You started the cooking process.
I see
the brine.
It's just like the same thing happens with fish and lemon and citrus. You know, you begin, it begins breaking down the meat, if you will.
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. We have turkey tips and more for you tonight with our master chefs here in studio. If you have a comment or a question, give us a call. Melissa calling for Waldorf. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hello, everyone. This is my first year brining the turkey, and I want to know, can I start brining it tonight, or should I do it Wednesday morning, or is there like a period?
Well, I would say you could start tonight. You could definitely start tonight and Wednesday morning. I would not brine it less than 3 or 4 hours, okay? But to brine it a day or two, nothing wrong with that process at all. In fact, you'll find that the turkey breast meat is just as tender as it can be.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I have 11-pound turkey. How much salt should I put in it? Maybe a half a cup?
11 pounds, maybe half, three-fourths.
Yeah, 3/4 cups.
And if you're going to do it 2 days, let's put it this way, Melissa. If you're going to start today, I would do a half cup and water to cover it, okay? If you're going to do it for 3 or 4 hours, then I would go with the 3/4 cups for 11-pound turkey.
Now, what kind of seasonings should Melissa put in her brining mixture? I'm assuming, Melissa, that you're going to do a traditional tasting turkey?
Yes.
Okay, so what does that mean, that traditional tasting turkey? What should be in that brine water?
Parsley, sage, rosemary, thyme. There's another herb called savory that I tend to use, and it gives you sort of a poultry seasoning flavor. But all of those things I named, the rosemary, sage, thyme, that's what poultry seasoning is, actually. Mm-hmm. That's what's in poultry seasoning. Mm-hmm. One thing I like to do is to put the whole herb. So when we go to the store and get the herbs from bottles, it's usually powdered or very much, I won't say processed, but flaked. The leaves, mm-hmm. the broken leaves. I like to just get
some sprigs of parsley.
Yeah, fresh, and just put it in. And I tell you something else. I stuffed the cavity of the turkey with those herbs, and it is amazing. So I just take a handful of herbs, an onion, a lemon, and just stuff it in there and just let it brine. What'd you say, Chef? You do that, huh?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
So, okay. Tell me, Chef. He's just sitting there. You can give away your secrets. Talk to me.
Yes, definitely. Like she said, those traditional herbs, rosemary, sage, parsley, thyme. You want to incorporate that into your turkey with the brining process. Oranges wouldn't hurt to squeeze over top of that turkey. Salt and pepper. Those are the key ingredients in the kitchen. Those two spices, salt and pepper. Do not cook anything without it.
Hmm. What's that, Melissa?
I don't have to salt it because I'm brining it.
Exactly. Yeah.
But you do have the pepper.
Sound like you know a little bit in there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. No, I'm listening to you guys. That's
what right. Melissa, another thing is, along with that salt and pepper, I'm a garlic person. Oh, love to put. Got to have a little garlic in there.
Uh-huh. But mm-hmm. where and how?
Put a little garlic after you've rinsed the turkey from the brine. Put some garlic in on the turkey itself at the end.
And one more tip is to keep that turkey dry after the brine. You want to pat it dry.
Why is that?
Because it just helps the cooking process along the way.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Melissa, good luck to you and happy Thanksgiving. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. We are talking about making sure your turkey dinner on Thanksgiving is the best that it can be. My guests are Angela Chester Johnson. She's a master chef. Also, Chef Rahm has some tips for you. So please give us a call. We're going to be, of course, taking phone calls as even after 7:30, as always on SiriusXM. So, what do I have here, Chef? Because you want me to taste something. You like to take things to the next level. So yeah. I'm going to.
Well, you know, we're living in a new day, and we got a lot of pescatarians, vegetarians, you know, people who don't do poultry. So I did you a nice Cajun citrus salmon.
Okay.
You understand what I'm saying? With a fried rice. and some seared green beans.
Mm-hmm. Okay. It's good.
Is it really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Good.
Okay.
But I'm a turkey guy.
That's you. That's I know. I know you are.
I know. You're trying to, you know, you have those vegetarians, pescatarians.
Yeah.
Vegans and grass eaters and, and all of that stuff.
Right.
But I would say it's healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always a good thing. Now, for the unhealthy part. We have some.
It's Thanksgiving, for God's sake.
Oh, you got to have that sweet potato pie.
This is yours, Angela?
It is.
Okay. And it's still warm. Mm-hmm.
That's a good sign. Mm-hmm.
You know it's good when you get that laugh in.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Thank you. Very, very good. I can just sit back now and watch the football game.
Exactly. Family, food, and football. That's Thanksgiving.
Let me go back to the phone lines. James calling from, excuse me, James, Lake Arbor. What's on your mind, man?
Hey, how you doing? Good evening. I'm enjoying the conversation in the show. Hey, how are you doing? Thank you for all the good advice. I'm in the process of brining now. And I just had a question, forgive me if I missed it, but how long do you brine normally for, like, is it by per pound, or is it you just, how long do you want to keep the flavor of what you're brining with inside the turkey? Do you have any suggestions on that, please?
Well, I would say traditionally overnight would be the best thing to do for that turkey. So if what time is it now? 8 o'clock.
Just before 7:30, and we got to get ready to take a break. As a matter of fact,
go ahead and brine that turkey overnight.
Right. So let me say this too: the length of time overnight. I agree with Chef Rom 100%. But if your turkey is large, when you think about the size of the turkey, that would just be a clue of how much brine to put in.
Mm-hmm.
So I'd say anywhere from a quarter of a cup, if you just got like a glorified chicken, to a cup if you have maybe a 16-pound bird.
All right, James, good luck to you. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Stay with us. The Daily Drum will continue on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. More of this conversation about making sure your Thanksgiving feast is the best that it possibly can be. This conversation continues on Sirius XM, Channel 141 in just a few seconds. Stay with us. We're still answering your phone calls at 202-319-7810. I want to ask about yeast rolls. We want to get into that on the other side. We'll be back in a moment.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student-run WHBC HD3, GlassHouseRadio.com, SiriusXM Channel 142, HBCU and SiriusXM Channel 141, HUR Voices, Washington.
Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are throwing down tonight in this pre-Thanksgiving Day discussion about making sure that everything that you cook on Thanksgiving Day is absolutely perfect. Angela Chester Johnson is a master chef, and she has some thoughts about cranberry sauce. I'm going to ask her about that. Also, Reginald Mack, also known as Chef Rom, has some tips to help take your dishes to the next level, as my mouth waters over his over his salmon and fried rice and some string beans over here. Lines are open if you have a comment or a question. There are no dumb questions tonight. And if you think you have a dumb question about what happens in the kitchen, change your name. It's okay. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Beverly, thanks for calling. Calling from Gaithersburg. What's on your mind?
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm making greens for a friend's house, and they asked me to say no chemicals. So
what does that mean?
It's a chemical.
I know. So at first I was like, okay, I'm out of my comfort zone because I'm used to using, like, smoked turkey necks and a seasoning packet, So she said things that you could pronounce, like seasons that you could pronounce, and not like the seasoning pack is out because it has stuff that, you know, not just regular seasonings, but maybe preservatives or whatever. So I'm trying to figure out what she did say. I can use a smoked turkey, so that's good. But what other seasonings? What other seasonings should I add?
Well, definitely salt, pepper, some garlic will help you out. That smoked turkey gonna take you a long way.
A very long way. And I will tell you something. I mince onions and put that in my greens. It's really good. And then another thing that I do towards the end of the cooking process, I put in maybe about 3 or 4 healthy tablespoons of cream of celery soup. And trust me.
in your collard greens?
Absolutely.
Where are you from?
Don't forget that butter. don't forget your butter.
Absolutely.
That sounds good.
The other thing is, towards the end of that cooking process, I also put in about 2 tablespoons of apple cider vinegar. And I actually put in about a tablespoon, a heaping tablespoon of white sugar.
I'm a brown sugar kind of guy.
Oh, I love brown sugar. Yes, indeed. Right. Brown sugar and greens. Mm-hmm. So in that seasoning package, the predominant thing that you have in there, besides all of the 7-syllable words, is salt,
there,
pepper, brown sugar.
Can't get away from it.
Onion powder, garlic powder. Boom. That's it. You can do that.
Mm-hmm. And I would say, like you said, Chef Rom, the smoked turkey.
Yeah.
And I don't like smoked turkey necks because I like using wings or legs because there is more flavor.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, necks are fine, but they're mostly bone. You know, and they don't have as much flavor. But honestly, I mean, if you want it, down home. But I like it just plenty of smoked turkey, you know, lots of water. And I use hot sauce and a little sugar and I let it ride.
Well, now you said water. That's one thing that I'm gonna have to disagree with you.
You saw me put my finger up too.
Let me say this.
Yeah.
When I cover
the turkey
yeah. with water.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. That's
yeah.
what. I, yeah. yeah. And then I just. And I let the water get flavored.
Yeah.
And then I put the greens in, but I don't add more water to that.
Right. Chef Rom, I don't know about you, but I do chicken stock.
That's one of the biggest things I always say.
It's a flavor.
When you're cooking anything, like maybe if you're cooking rice, don't cook it in water, cook it in a stock.
Mm-hmm.
You're gonna build flavors on all layers of cooking.
Right.
That's what you want to do.
And what happens, though, what I will say, we were on radio, so you couldn't see me put my finger up.
Right.
Water, but stock is water.
Yeah.
That's flavored with something.
Yeah, flavored
so the water, water he's speaking of is the water that has become stock by virtue of the fact that he cooked the smoked turkey in it, probably with some onion and celery and who knows, maybe pepper.
Yeah.
And the other thing, when I do use stock, and I actually have a lot of stock at home, I use a little sodium stock.
I do too.
Yeah, it's a little more expensive, not much.
Right.
But it's so much healthier.
Definitely. Well, they had a 12-pack at Costco this week for about $2-3 off.
I'll be there tomorrow.
Yeah. Uh-huh. And I liked it also because it was the cans.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't have to open. What you open, you use. You use what you open,
you
pretty much.
You got to use the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Beverly, good luck to you. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Angela, calling from Virginia. Thanks for cooking. What's on your mind? Thanks for cooking. thanks for calling, Angela.
You see where our head is.
No problem. Thank you for having me. So I just had a question about something new that I'm going to be making this year. Mm-hmm. But I wanted to weigh in on the brine discussion, just if I might, because I actually have been doing it for years. And when the chef said, or someone asked, why do you pat it dry? It's because the skin won't crisp if you don't. Any type of crispiness on the outside of your roast turkey, if you don't. And I also after I pat it down, like you all said, I then rub like butter, like compound butter that I mixed with something, smoked paprika usually, and white pepper, just something that gives it some flavor, but no more salt, like you said. And then the skin comes out kind of crispy too. But anyway.
You're doing it right.
You're right.
Well, Angela, thank you so much for sharing that with us. I appreciate that.
Yeah.
I'll see you on Thursday.
No joke. Virginia, right?
202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Pam, calling from Virginia. Thanks for calling, Pam. What's on your mind?
Hello.
Hey,
hey Pam.
I'm mad at you.
Why?
For eating while the rest of us are driving home and not able to eat.
Uh-oh.
I'm not. Well, let me just say that I'm not just the guilty party here. There are three plates.
Mm-hmm. So I just wanted to give a couple of tips because I heard people calling in. First of all, real simple. If you go on your cell phone or whatever. It's called Real Simple. They'll give you the chart on how long to cook your turkey, what pound it is. Real wonderful chart that you can use for those of us that already know. We know how to do it. My other tip is something I do. First of all, why are there people calling up that this is their first time? They're going to try to cook a turkey 2 days before Thanksgiving, and they're doing it for the first time.
But I know what, Pam?
Pam,
there was a first time for you, too.
Yeah, but it wasn't the 2 days before Thanksgiving.
She had done her reconnaissance.
I should have asked my mama.
Well, at least they're calling in trying to get some advice.
let me talk to your mother, Pam.
Yeah, I should have asked my mama and learned. But I wanted to give a tip. If you season your turkey and all, get that stuff out of that cavity, and then take an onion, cut it in quarters, baby carrots, celery, parsley, fresh parsley, fresh rosemary, and put the carrots and the onion in a bag the night before in a Ziploc bag. Put a little seasoning on that in the morning. Stuff that into the cavity of the turkey. Put the fresh rosemary, fresh thyme in there. Cover the turkey with Reynolds wrap, or if you have a big enough pan to cover that has a top, that's fine. But this is the thing to keep that turkey juicy. I've learned this. Pour water at the bottom of the pan. Put enough water to let it come halfway to the pan. Cover it up. Put it in the oven. Cook it to the amount of time, whatever, you know, poundage you have. That turkey will be juicy as all get out.
Okay. You were agreeing with that,
Angela. It will definitely
be
juicy. You definitely want to put that water. And frankly, that becomes my gravy.
Mm-hmm.
That becomes my gravy at the end. I take that water and all the drippings. I leave mine right in the roaster. Remove the turkey at the end. Leave that in the roaster.
Mm-hmm.
And then I just make a little white roux with flour and water or cornstarch and water.
Slurry.
I would say about 2 tablespoons of cornstarch or flour and water, maybe 3, depending on how much water you have left, and stir it up. I put in a little bit of paprika because that'll give it some rich golden color, and pour it in and just let that pan sit in the oven, and that's all you have to do.
It becomes
this most wonderful gravy.
Pam, thank you so much. And I'll just save a brother a plate, please.
You eat everywhere.
Yeah, absolutely. I got a kid in college.
Man.
Let's talk a little about gravy. I'm sorry, not gravy. Stuffing, dressing, whatever you want to call it. You know, we've heard so much about people cooking stuffing in the turkey and how that's bad. Your thoughts about that?
I stuff mine.
Mm-hmm.
I put my stuffing right in the turkey. And I also do a pan on the side because people typically really like stuffing. And I will do a couple of kinds because I have one of those vegetarians in the family.
Mm-mm-mm.
And then I might want to do one with some ground turkey and giblets and chicken livers and sausage, you know, dirty stuffing. Dirty stuffing. Mm-hmm. But I do like to cook mine inside the turkey. I think there's no flavor replacement for it. However, I do remove it the next day.
And what's the temperature that stuffing should it should that stuffing be?
I think it should be like 155.
165.
Okay. Okay.
Because the thing that you do want to avoid are what? What is
bacteria. Yeah, bacteria. Any kind of food poisoning. Yes.
Any of that kind of stuff. So here's the other thing. Yeast rolls. Mm. Chef
over
that's
here.
That's a dying art.
talk to me about that because, and I'm not talking about going to the store and buying them. How is that done? And what are the mistakes that people make when making your traditional yeast rolls?
Well, yeast rolls are just an amazing addition to any meal. Mm-hmm. And it's truly a labor of love because it is labor. I think that the timing of allowing them to rise, as well as the kneading process.
So
kneading
take
means,
me through the process.
Okay, so for the yeast roll, it has an agent that makes it rise. That's what the yeast is, the agent that makes it rise. But there's also something that you have to kick the agent into effect, right? So the yeast is the bullet, but you need a trigger. So the trigger is warm water and sugar. And you have to dissolve your yeast in that first. And then afterwards, when you do your mixture, you have butter as well. And you mix it up so that it is almost gooey, but not sticky. You'll find getting the consistency right is important. The consistency of the flour once you've added the water, butter, and yeast, okay? So what you want to do is gradually add more flour until that dough is very soft, but that when you stir it, it pulls away from the bowl that you're stirring it in. Then once you do that, you cover it in a warm, non-drafty place. That's straight from a recipe, right? But you cover it, and then you allow it to rise. And that's usually about 30, 40 minutes until it's double its size. That's what you do, right? And then once you do that, this is the fun part, really. You take your fist, a floured fist or a greased fist, and you just punch it right in the middle. And then you take that greased or floured hands. I think I use grease most of the time, like a vegetable oil with a little butter, and just massage it, you know, knead it, massage it. And then when you can pull it up, pull the big dough up and squeeze it off, and then make shapes. You make your rolls. You make a crescent roll. You make a three-leaf clover. You make a double roll. You can put it in a muffin tin. You can put them on a cookie sheet. But you form the roll, okay? And then after you form the roll, it has to rise again. Mm-hmm. And this is one of the parts that people, because there's so many parts.
Time.
And people
don't have time for that.
Yeah, you want to get it done, but you have to let it rise again. Yeah,
now, when you say rise again, it rises again after you have put it in the shape that you want it to be.
Yes.
So exactly. On the pan or in the cupcake tins or what have
you. Yes, and before you put them in the oven, you cover them and you let them rise again.
How long does that take?
Again, tell us about double in size. It's a little bit less time. It's probably half the time. It's less time than the first time because the first time it's a big, huge mass. Mm-hmm. Now you don't have that big critical mass. You have pieces, right? But you cover it up. And I like to let mine rise on top of the oven because the oven is preheated. Mm. So that's that warm little place, you know. And then put it in the oven. And the other thing is don't overcook them once you did all that work.
Right.
Really, really, really pay attention. Yeah. And usually it takes about 12 minutes for a roll to cook.
Basically about two, three hours for the whole thing.
Definitely.
So that's why I do biscuits.
Yeah, yeah. I will give you a clue on tenderness, a clue on like making like mouth-watering rolls. I mean, I've tasted some that I have never been able to match. I don't know what those folks do. But I can tell you what does help make it rise, when you use the water to make the yeast kick in, activate the yeast, use potato water. Boil some potatoes in some water. And then it's starchy. And then you know how a potato will like kind of flake off a little bit. You want to use all that, okay? All that. Mm-hmm. You measure it and you put your yeast in. And that potato water gives the bread a lightness to it. I guess like potato bread.
Yeah.
A lightness to it. And it's really, really good.
That's what they got the name for.
Is the bread the most challenging thing to make outside of perhaps the turkey, but because what you described is something that's really complex. Mm-hmm. I mean, we've talked about brining a turkey. Okay, you brine the turkey overnight, you put some seasonings in it, you put it in the oven, just don't overcook it, and just make sure that you don't make folks sick, you know. But what you've just described is really complex. Is there anything more complex than the bread that you can think of?
You know, the bread is just labor intensive. The bread is just labor intensive. It's not that it's so complex, but it's labor intensive.
Right, and when you got all these things to do, you kind of fall short with that because you focus it on everything else.
I would say you would get forgiven for a bad roll before you get forgiven for some bad mac and cheese or some bad greens.
Mac and cheese.
Or some bad greens. That's right.
You never hear the end of that.
And see, there's been a lot of discussion during this holiday season about mac and cheese. I would say more than we've heard in years. What's going on with the mac and cheese? Why is mac and cheese, why is it now elevated to the level of the turkey?
Well, because there's so many different ways to do it. You know, you got your traditional mac and cheese, your five baked mac and cheese. Now we got crab mac and cheese.
And lobster mac and cheese.
And lobster mac and cheese.
And
shrimp mac and cheese.
And people love macaroni and cheese. People love it.
It's a no-brainer. You got to have it on the table.
So what's the foundational? What's the mac and cheese that everybody's going to love without, you know, turning off half the crowd?
Well, keep it simple. Keep it basic. Everybody's going to love a good mac and cheese cooked with love, with five different cheeses. Start off with a bechamel. If people don't know what that is, it's just your roux, milk, and then you add in your different cheeses. You want that sauce. And then you want to bake that off in the oven.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure you cover that top with plenty of cheese, because some people like that nice brown touch on the top mm-hmm. of that mac and cheese. They let them know, oh, wow, yeah, this is baked. This is baked mac and cheese.
When you say with your milk, does it matter whether you're talking about regular milk or evaporated milk or skim milk? Does it make a difference?
It all makes a difference because you got the flavoring,
the richness of it.
Yeah, the richness of the dish. So you're not gonna get a real good flavor out of skim milk.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely won't. Regular milk is cool because I mean, like you say, the cheeses that you add is gonna give it that flavor as well.
What other seasonings other than the cheeses would you add?
Salt and pepper.
Those salt and pepper take you a long way.
Mm-hmm.
Let's keep it simple.
Butter.
Let's keep it basic. Oh, mm-hmm. You ain't making it without it. Not mac and cheese.
Right. And my family enjoys cream of mushroom soup.
I heard about that.
Yeah, it's really good. You should check it out. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and what you do is just...
Where are you from?
Well, I haven't told you about the sauerkraut yet.
Uh-oh. In the mac and cheese?
No.
No.
Oh, I was going to say.
Hey, don't knock until you try it, though. Hey.
We're not bringing her back. Don't save a brother a plate with the...
But when you make that bechamel sauce, which, uh-huh. again, guys, is just really basically milk, flour, and butter, uh-huh. and the cheese, you put a can of condensed cream of mushroom soup in there. Mmm.
Yeah. Well, so what does that do?
It makes it rich. It adds a little mushroom flavor. You know, it's good. It adds, it makes it rich, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's really just yummy.
Mm-hmm. I mean, traditionally, I've always liked a firm, mac and cheese. Not so
cheesy.
That
brick.
Exactly.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And that's that's certainly what I'm used to. But what can you add to that? Because I'm assuming that the way the cheese is when it's cold will determine the consistency when it's cooked and when it's firm. So if you use a soft cheese in the beginning, it's going to help soften the end product. Is that correct? Because, if you just use hard cheddar, mm-hmm. You're going to have that brick, you know. And I like, as I mentioned this before the program, I like a smoked cheddar mac and cheese. It's just cheddar, but it gives it a nice smoky flavor, which is really surprising. Mm-hmm. But then on top, I put more extra sharp cheddar and bake it mm-hmm. to give it, the crust. But you've got to have the balance between. You don't want so much cheese that it overpowers the macaroni, but you also don't want so much macaroni that it overpowers the flavor of the cheese.
What I call an old school mac and cheese, which I like as well, uh-huh. like the kind my mom made, where it's actually a lot more macaroni than it is cheese. And she used pet milk, butter, mm-hmm. Block cheese, not shredded cheese, but block cheese that you just cut up. And she kind of swirled it around there. No sauce, no sauce. Just the butter and the milk was the sauce, if you will. And one egg, mm-hmm. and just baked it. And that was it, mm-hmm.
Makes sense.
But even if you use a hard cheese, you can have a wet macaroni, if you will. It depends on how high you cook it. So usually mm-hmm. you should cook it about 425, and then how long you cook it. And then I think whether you use a bechamel sauce or not, et cetera.
Because usually when I do that roux, I also have some smoked paprika, but I also use, traditional mac and cheese is dry mustard.
But what I've
used is a golden spicy mustard, not mm-hmm. dry, mm-hmm. but I'll use if I'm making a big pan, then I'll use like 2 tablespoons of the dark Gouldens mustard, which gives it a spiciness. So you still have the mustard, but it gives it a richer mustard without overpowering, and of course, then there's the egg.
Okay, that's nice. Now, Chef Rom, let me ask you a question. Do you ever put breadcrumbs on top of your mac and cheese?
That's the Thomas Jefferson way.
Thomas Jefferson. Wait a minute, break that down.
the presidential way.
That's George Washington, James Madison.
Yeah.
47 years.
Tasty.
Definitely.
I've done it. Yeah. It's tasty.
It's all about textures.
Yes.
You don't want the same texture throughout the whole dish. So, like you say, when you're getting that crust on the mac and cheese, that breadcrumb will give you that same thing.
Mm-hmm. So when do you put the breadcrumbs on top?
Well, about 10 minutes before it's done. Mm-hmm. You want to sprinkle those breadcrumbs on top and then throw it back in there and let it go.
Mm-hmm. And what I do with mine, I mm-hmm. actually mix a little shredded cheese mm-hmm. with the breadcrumbs, like about 1/4 shredded cheese to 3/4 breadcrumbs, and maybe a little butter.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-huh. And then just spread it over the top. It's Thanksgiving, y'all.
Beautiful, right?
Right, exactly.
Presentation is everything.
So, Angela, what is your problem with cranberry sauce?
Uh-oh.
I really don't have a problem with cranberry sauce. I was responding to a question, and as a matter of fact, Thanksgiving has to have certain taste bites, right?
Yeah.
And my taste bite, okay, I'm going to mess you guys up now because then I'm going to talk about sauerkraut. Okay. But my taste bite on a fork is a piece of turkey, a little bit of stuffing, a little bit of sauerkraut, and then cranberry sauce.
Wow.
And it's so
well. I can see
good.
That.
Good.
I can see yeah, that.
I can see that without the cranberries. I mean, without the sour cream.
I would go cabbage instead of that.
Well, cabbage. That cabbage works too. But yeah. You know. But what I will say about cranberry sauces, I was asked a question. You have so much, like this feast on Thanksgiving. Mm. What could you let go of? What do you think just doesn't have to be there? Yeah, I know you guys would say sauerkraut. But
I ain't never had sauerkraut on my table.
I try not to have sauerkraut at all.
I think that's a Baltimore thing. You asked me where I'm from. Uh-huh. So I'm here. I'm from, I was born and raised in Maryland. Born on the Eastern Shore, raised for a time in Baltimore, and then my family moved west to Oakland, California. So it really was a big joke about sauerkraut because mm-hmm. people from Baltimore always have sauerkraut. Ask anybody from Baltimore, Maryland, Thanksgiving, you must have sauerkraut.
As I live in Baltimore, I've not seen it, but I
guess you got to be kidding.
Yeah, but maybe that's because I come home to D.C.
Okay, then that's why. That's why.
But, you know, I do like cranberry sauce that has berries
and
the orange and the lemon. I don't like just the gelatin. I like the real.
I love cooking with the cranberry sauce.
With a little. And to say.
Hey! Oh, okay. Yeah, you guys are teaching me something.
I'm going to try that one this year.
Yeah. Yes. But I love the berried cranberry sauce. Yeah, I don't mind the smooth one, but I love the berried cranberry sauce. Mm-hmm. So I just said, if you could leave something off, if you got to leave something off, for me, it would be, you could leave off the cranberry sauce and still have a great meal, you know?
That's tough.
Or you could leave off one of those starches. Because I don't know about anybody else, but... You know, most of the tables have mac and cheese, mashed potatoes,
sweet potatoes. Yeast rolls.
Yeast rolls, right? So one of those you could just drop.
I don't know which
one. But I don't know which one, right?
Yeah, there you go. which
mashed potatoes would probably have...
No.
If you talk about mac and cheese or yams... Mashed potatoes got to go. I don't know.
It depends on who's
because you got your giblet gravy.
It wouldn't be a proper Thanksgiving.
I'm not thinking about either one of y'all. Just don't be surprised if I show up. Like I said, I got a kid in college. I'm freezing stuff. Angela Chester Johnson, Chef Rob, thank you all so much for sharing with us, and happy Thanksgiving to one and all. That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM Channel 141 for this Tuesday. That is Thanksgiving Eve. I'm Harold Fisher. Stay tuned for The Connection. Good night.